top of just getting revenge and killing these people, he also has to suck brains, and it's... I don't know, maybe he picked up a taste for brains during the 300 years that he was...
Just riding around on a comet.
Yeah.
Well, and then...
Riding a comet will do that to you.
And then it's not a... Yeah, it makes me hungry for brains all the time.
This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
And now, Sci-Fi for Me Radio presents... A safe space for bad movies. Welcome to the Bomb Shelter.
Hello and welcome to the Bomb Shelter, a safe place for bad movies. I'm your host this time, Jay McDowell, and with me as always is my co-host, Kevin Chum.
Hello.
Our movie treat this time is the 1962 Mexican classic, The Brainiac.
I shall return to your world within 300 years. When that comet completes its cycle and is once again in these latitudes.
300 years later, the Count returns to Earth in The Brainiac. See horrible and insane killings as the Count turns into a monster and seeks his revenge. See the Count feast from human brains. Don't miss the most horror-filled film of the century, The Brainiac.
That was the trailer for The Brainiac. The movie was directed by Chano... Oh boy, this is going to be a lot of fun.
I know.
A lot of Spanish.
You're
going to
do better
names.
Than I would, though.
We've grown up in Southern California. We should be able to do this.
Yeah.
Okay, the director, Chano Urieta.
Just say
sorry.
It.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to butcher these. Sorry, people. It was written by Federico Curiel and Adolfo Lopez Portillo.
Yeah.
And it stars a lot of people who we have probably never seen before. And
I never will again.
Well, we might. There's a reason we might. But
yeah,
that's
true.
We have Abel Salazar, who stars as the Baron Vitellus de Estera, our main bad guy, the main brainiac guy.
Yeah, yeah, the main villain.
The main villain, thank you. It's been a long day.
Yes.
We have David Silva as the Comandante, the lead detective who plays prominently in the movie. We also have Ruben Rojo, who plays two roles. He plays, in the present time, Ronnie Miranda, and in the past, he plays Marcos Miranda. And then we also have Adrienne Welter. She plays Victoria Contreras, and she is also a relative, as we will find out, of some people who did the good Baron wrong back in the past.
Yeah.
Oh, so,
1661.
We go back 350 something years.
Math.
My mathing isn't working right now, but it's 350 something years to what was then New Spain, but is Mexico City.
Yeah,
and we are witnessing, the Spanish Inquisition going on. And I can't think of any way to fit any. Nobody expected a Spanish Inquisition jokes.
Yeah.
We kind of were expecting it with this movie, so
yeah,
we'll pass on that one. At any rate, we have a secret tribunal going on, a not very legitimate-looking one,
yeah.
But that's how the whole Spanish Inquisition was, pretty much. And on trial is the good Baron Vitellus, however you pronounce his name, Vitellius.
Let's just call him the Baron.
The Baron, that works. He's on trial for a whole slew of... crimes and atrocities.
Yeah.
According to the movie, we'll just give you a little inside baseball here. We actually went and found all of the text for the very long intro.
Yeah.
First scene of the movie.
Yeah, so the first scene you have the Inquisitor reading the...
Yeah, like the prosecutor,
The prosecutor reading off the crimes of this Baron. And it goes on and on. And I mean, that alone is enough torture. I think they should just let him go after sitting through that.
Well, he seemed to enjoy it a couple times.
Yeah.
We went and found all this and we put it into a Word doc and it's like four paragraphs long. So we will not read all of this to you, but we'll give you a little summary here. Basically, prosecutor goes on, tells you know why they're there, and pretty much covers where they're at right down to almost the city block, and you know, saying that they're holding a tribunal against the Baron. He apparently has done quite a few things, including instigation of heresy, heresy, dogmatism, using witchcraft, superstitions, and conjurations for depraved and dishonest ends,
yes,
of course.
Of course.
He has employed the art of necromancy, invoking the dead, and using those to foretell the future, which really, you know, what do you use corpses for?
Yeah, I mean, what else are you going to do?
The future. And for having seduced married women.
Smile.
Smile, yes.
Yeah.
In a few of these, the more juicy, salacious accusations,
yeah,
the Baron gives this gigantic smirk.
Smile. The first time I saw it, I thought, the first time I saw this movie, I think I've seen it at least three times, maybe four now, but the first time I thought, was he supposed to smile there? Because it just seems so out of, it's such a, like a, I mean, it's not really scary, but the Baron's in what should be a really scary situation.
Yeah, he's in a basement in shackles.
And they're basically saying, you know, we're going to torture you and this and that. And he starts like snickering at some of the accusations. And it's like, maybe the time for smiling is over.
Yeah, well, I do know from personal experience that when I get stressed out, it used to drive my dad nuts, because when I'd get in trouble and get stressed out, I'd start laughing.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't find that as humorous as I did. Something you learn not to do in basic training really fast.
When I was in junior high, I went to a funeral, and the one place you do not ever smile, of course, I had to fight, even though I'm the person who had passed away, I really, really liked him, had nothing to do with that, and I was sad. But the fact that there was no room for smiling, I could not keep a straight face, because it was just my nerves, I guess. I mean,
yeah, it's a nervous thing, but I don't think the Baron was nervous.
He's not nervous, no.
Because as they start reading what they're going to do to him, which includes, well, what they did to him already, they tortured him already, and they said that basically, if he is maimed or dies or blood is drawn, then
yeah, that's evidence
that he's guilty.
Yeah, that means you're guilty. if any of the things that we do to you do what they're supposed to do to any human being, then that means you're guilty.
And it shows you haven't repented.
Yeah.
And as they're reading these things, which it's like, you know, they put him on the rack, they trussed his arms and twisted him around. He just smiles and he looks like, you know, oh, you know, bring it. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And then it later on, they say, you know, he was told of the decision that they were going to stop because, you know, it wasn't doing anything, and that they would do it again as necessary. And then he just is like, well, come on, let's go. So, you know, that really kind of made them all mad.
It's a really strange beginning to a movie. It just sort of begins, and this monologue that goes on and on with the guy snickering, and you're trying to figure out, you know, the first time you watch it, you're trying to figure out what's going on. Why is he laughing? And again, this is a B movie. In the end, you're kind of like, well, I kind of just don't care.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, you're like, is it badly written? Am I not getting this? What's going on?
And there might be a really good reason for it too, and we'll get into that a little bit later. Just due to the way the movie was made in its history. At any rate, back to the story itself, the Baron is convicted, and he's going to be put in some silly clothes and burned at the stake. And as he's roasting, a comet appears overhead, and his good friend Marcos Miranda is there watching, and the Baron looks up and sees a air quotes comet.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, got a little mixed up there. Air quotes comet going across the sky, and he looks up and Miranda looks up. And then he looks at the Baron, and the Baron looks at him, and the Baron looks up at the comet. Marcos Miranda looks up at the comet, and they look at each other again. They look at and it's like, what is going on here? And it's the weirdest looking. It's a drawing of a comet, but it's fuzzy, so you kind of can't see that it's like a comet on a stick. But it looks kind of like the More You Know star from the old NBC thing.
Yeah, it does.
And but it looks like it's like on a stick, because all the stars behind it are fuzzy too.
Yep.
So it's like they were trying to keep you from seeing that it was.
Yeah, it's like, well, this really you can tell it's not real. Let's just blur it out, and then you won't be able to tell.
So as he's cooking, the Baron throws out a curse at the inquisitors that have put him there. And as he's doing this, he can see that he knows who they are. They're all hooded, you know, because nobody was supposed to know who they were. And he can see them, and he calls them out, and he says, he gives probably the lamest curse I can think of, because it really doesn't affect them. But basically, he says, this comet's here, and in 300 years it'll come back, and when it does, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to take out all your...
ancestors.
Your family that's come since.
Yeah.
Since this time. If it sounds like I am not totally awake, it's because I'm not totally awake after... this movie was good, but we had a lot of pizza beforehand.
Oh, so. Yeah. Bad decision. Well, good decision and bad decision.
Yes, it's a mix. So then we go, the Baron, we assume, is fried, and then we jump 300 years to the future. 300 years to
present day.
Well,
kind of.
Contemporary. 1961. And then we start meeting up with their present day versions.
Versions, yeah.
Yeah, so now instead of Marcos Miranda, we meet Ronnie Miranda, his descendant.
Yeah.
That was the word I was looking for.
Descendant. Yeah, I said ancestor, it's the opposite. And he
threw me off.
Yeah.
And we meet several other descendants of the people at the Inquisition. And we also find out just how the Baron comes back, which is riding the comet, apparently.
Yeah, really odd.
It's very odd. We see the same comet. Ronnie Miranda and his fiance, Victoria Contreras, are both astronomers, and they're working with their professor buddy, who knows about this comet coming in, but can't seem to find it for some reason.
Yeah.
And both men look around, and then Victoria looks, and she's like, well, there it is.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. I was even joking when, because I had forgotten since last time, but I'm like, she walks up to the telescope, and I just say, oh, there it is. Just kind of joking. And then literally, you know, 2 seconds later, she says, oh, there it is.
Because the professor tells Ronnie, oh, you're looking in the northern latitudes. Look in the southern latitudes. And he moves about, 2.5 feet over.
Yeah.
He moves the telescope, and then, oh, you know, I still can't see it. Wonder why.
Yeah.
So they all go on outside. Or, well, Ronnie and Victoria go on outside, and they see it in a little telescope over the city, and then see something drop off of the comet.
Clunk.
Clunk.
Yeah, it literally just, it's like you drop, you know, they're filming this little set, this little miniature set, and you just drop something.
Yeah, and it just looks like a big... like a big fish tank rock.
Yeah.
You know, big, craggy looking rock. And somebody else also happens to see it.
Yeah.
Drives up, does what every poor first victim in every really bad B movie does, and walks up to investigate, and is promptly killed and has his clothes stolen by the Brainiac.
Yeah, the Brainiac.
Which. Wow.
Let's talk about him. And this kind of my main, I don't know, my main thing I want to talk about, but the one of the strangest things in this movie to me is I can't quite figure out, is it supposed to be a movie about a witch because he was accused of witchcraft, or is he some sort of Dracula vampire type thing?
Alien?
Is he an alien because there's the whole space
on the comet and everything.
And then there's also the brain from the name Brainiac.
Yeah.
It's because he apparently likes the taste of brain.
Yeah.
Or brains, as the scientists call it.
Because we apparently have multiple
brains, yeah. His brains are gone.
Yeah, the Brainiac's... Well, okay. The Baron's method of taking someone's brain is basically to hypnotize them. And kind of makes them freeze. They can't move under their own will, and then as they're watching it, with the people that he's coming to seek revenge against, he usually does something to someone close to them.
Yeah.
In both cases I can think of off the top of my head, the one gentleman, he seduces his daughter.
Yeah.
Makes out with her a little bit, then sucks her brains out, and then sucks his brains out, and then kills them. And the other one, the gentleman that owned the foundry, seduces her wife. And this is 1961, so you're not seeing anything. They kiss. That's seduction.
Yeah, yeah.
And sucks her brains out, and then makes the guy throw himself into a furnace, which, you know, seems a little overkill, but okay, it did the trick. And one of the two female descendants, because Victoria is a descendant of one of them, but the other female descendant, her and her husband just get married. He takes the husband out in kind of a gruesome way. He hangs him in the bathroom by his feet, by the shower head,
with his head under the water.
Yeah, fills the bathtub up and basically drowns him, and then takes her out.
Yeah.
But when he does this, he transforms from the, you know, suave, handsome Baron into the Brainiac, which looks like a cross between David Crosby and the Cowardly Lion.
Yeah.
With rubber pincher hands that are totally useless.
Yeah.
And he growls and makes a lot of, you know, roary noises and stuff. But it's really hard to describe if you can't see it or haven't looked it up. He's got this big head, big furry head, and when he breathes, I guess, the whole rubber mask sucks in and blows out, sucks in, blows out, and it's really weird.
And you wonder, is it because the mask just did that when the person inside it was breathing, or was it on purpose?
Was it intentional?
To say, like, oh, it's his whole head pulses when he attacks or something. I'm thinking it's that,
because you don't see, you know, his eyes weren't blinking, his mouth doesn't move because his tongue...
It's weird.
His tongue is weird. It's about a foot-long forked tongue. And the way he takes people's brains is he jams it in the back of their neck, not their skull, contrary to what the coroner was saying. And apparently sucks the brains out through the back of their neck.
It never gets really detailed on what happens, but that's the implication you get. And the tongue is really rigid sometimes, and then other times it just kind of hangs like a stuffed animal. Yeah.
And
then
it's
obvious tongue.
It's rubber. Yeah. Because he'll push up against somebody's head and it folds.
Yeah.
You know, like stiff rubber. But he has to fight the people to turn them around, and as he's doing it, the rubber pincher hands, you can see, I mean, he walks and he kind of pinches them, because it's like a thumb and a forefinger with a sucker on the end of each. And when he opens and when he closes them, they just fold on each other.
Yeah.
So when he goes to grab somebody, the fingers just kind of fold and they're like useless. So
it'd be much more useful if, I mean, okay, to suck brains out, you maybe need the special tongue, and I don't know about the rest of the head, but the hands, like regular Baron hands, would probably do a better job.
But again, we don't know exactly what the monster is.
Why is he like that? They never really explain that. Not that you'd expect it from a movie like this, but it'd be nice if there was some sort of, it's part of some family curse, or part of, you know, his witchcraft. It gave him these powers to turn into this like mythical beast or something like that. But none of it that's in there. It's just he's the Baron, and then, well, it'd be scary if he looked like a monster when he does this. So let's patch together some weird-looking monster
weird
thing.
Halloween mask and some rubber gloves. So as far as the story goes, he takes out all the descendants of the Inquisitors, and then he gets to the last one, which is Victoria.
Yeah.
And he's kind of torn because Ronnie is a descendant of the guy who defended him, so he has, you know, no ill will against him. But he also kind of has an eye for Victoria.
Yeah.
But he has to, you know, continue his revenge. So he tells her as much while he's trying to suck her brains out. And she is the only person in the movie who runs.
Yeah. Yeah, the rest of them. And the weird thing is, when he sort of hypnotizes people, it's sort of this... You'll see his face, it's sort of in his eye area. a light will sort of come on and then go off.
It's kind of like when Bela Lugosi's Dracula would hypnotize people.
Yeah.
And it'd just be a light across his eyes that they'd shine. And and you see it on the Baron, and then you see it on the person.
Yeah.
And then in a couple cases, their eyes bug out really big.
Which is funny. It's because we were commenting, one guy, he gets sort of hypnotized. I don't remember which character it was anymore.
No,
I can't. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But his eyes kind of bug out, and then the scene's really long. It goes back and forth between the hypnotized guy with his eyes bugging out, the Baron, and then the female victim.
That was the one with the daughter.
That's right. And you're like, well, he should have, you know, because things get worse and worse as he attacks the daughter, and you're thinking like, okay, you start with just open eyes, and then something bad happens, and your eyes slightly bug out more and more as it gets worse and worse. But in this case, he like jumped the gun and went to full bugging
bug-eyed
after the second one. He couldn't go anymore. He starts rolling his eyes around, like maybe that's going to help it look.
Yeah. But then he gets attacked, and it's like, instead of being attacked and like, you know, looking like, you know, being attacked, it's just, he's already there.
Yeah. It's like, it's too late. You've gone too far, too fast.
So the Brainiac chases around. Oh, and take a couple steps back. Ronnie figures out something's up.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Baron, he knows that Victoria, I was thinking of the Archie comics for some reason. Ronnie and Victoria are engaged, and he says that he wants to give Victoria a jewel.
Yeah.
Any jewel she wants. There had been a robbery when he first came to town, apparently. He robbed and stole all the money and all the jewels so he could, you know,
fund
his little endeavor. And he insists that Victoria go with him alone.
Yeah.
And Ronnie's kind of like, and he goes, well, don't you trust me? And plays on that a little bit.
Yeah.
And so he finally gets Victoria alone in his office, and he's showing her the jewels. Well, the Baron has this habit not only of sucking people's brains out fresh, I guess, because he likes them fresh, but he also keeps some on hand in a big bowl.
Which is odd. It's sort of in this like bowl slash like a gigantic cup,
almost a
giant chalice with brains in it. Literally, you know, several brains in there. Yeah. But they look like
They're whole.
So I don't know how he sucks it out and then it ends up kind of being one big piece again.
Yeah. So there's no indication of where those brains come from.
Yeah.
And how they don't get nasty sitting in the in the cabinet that he has them in.
Then again, I mean,
we aren't does
fresh brain taste better than not fresh brain? I don't know.
You just never know.
Never tried.
I know, when I get a steak at the market, I like to barbecue it the same night. I don't like freeze it and then bring it back out again. So,
yeah,
personal preference.
He has this habit of having to kind of snack every once in a while on it.
It indicates that it's kind of like he has to eat a lot of brains to keep going. So yeah, but he just takes like a couple spoonfuls.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have it in like a completely separate room. It's like Ronnie and Victoria are sitting in these two high back chairs, and he goes, well, excuse me a moment. And he just walks to the back of the room.
Yeah.
Opens the chest that he moved him to. For some reason he moved him from a cabinet to a chest.
That was I never got that either. I thought, did I miss something? Is the chest more secure?
When the police officers came in, and it's the police officers, they're not good cop, bad cop. They're smart cop, dumb cop.
Yeah, yeah.
The smart cop, he's walking around kind of checking, and apparently they don't need search warrants in Mexico
because
he just starts going through stuff. But he goes right to the cabinet where the brains are kept, and you think maybe he might open it up, but he doesn't. I don't know if maybe the Baron knew he was there or what, but he moves him. So he moves him to the chest. Well, later in the movie, when Victoria goes upstairs with the Baron, Ronnie goes over to the chest. He somehow figured out that the Baron went to the chest.
Yeah.
And he pops it open. He finds the brains.
Yeah.
And he figures something's going on. Well, then finally Victoria screams, because she's up to this point, the Baron's been like, you know, I want you, I think you're beautiful, gotta have you, but gotta kill you too. Sorry about that. And then he transforms and she just stares at him, and not because she's hypnotized.
Yeah.
And she doesn't scream until Ronnie opens the chest. She comes running downstairs. The Brainiac comes running down, rubber pinchy hands bending and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, oh, he's got the Baron has another thing that's never explained. He has a butler.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of is in on it, I guess.
It seems like it.
Because Ronnie tells Victoria, run. And she goes running to a doorway, and then the creepy little
butler shows up. Yeah, he kind of blocks her path, I guess.
Yeah, and he looks like he's like 90. She could have just pushed him over.
Easily.
So, at any rate, they...
The two cops come in.
Oh, yes.
Unexpectedly,
Yeah, they just burst in, and they have flamethrowers.
Flamethrowers.
Which I guess is standard issue.
It's standard Mexico PD. Police have flamethrowers.
I guess so. And then the smart cop, who knows how to operate the flamethrower, apparently fries the Baron, and the dumb cop just stands there fiddling,
trying to get his trigger going. He never does. And then you're thinking, like, well, they're going to, you know, explain, oh, I couldn't get, you know, some little, like, lighthearted thing at the end. Like, oh, it jammed. And, oh, but at least we stopped him. And nope, it just, the end.
Nothing. Yeah, it just goes, the end. Literally, the movie, the cops come in, they cook him. The Baron turns from the Brainiac to the Baron in his old clothes somehow.
Yeah.
Then to a skeleton.
Skeleton, yeah.
And then the end.
The end.
No question mark, no
nothing.
Just the end, done.
That's it.
And that seems like a good point.
That's right, a good spot to actually take a break as well.
To take a break and maybe get my brain to function properly. Yeah, we'll be right back.
Maybe eat some brains.
Ooh, brains.
Got a favorite B-movie? Send an email to bombshelter@scififorme.com. You're listening to the Bomb Shelter Podcast, only on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I'm meteorologist Brian Busby. If you're traveling to a convention this weekend, especially if you're a cosplayer, it helps to know what the weather's going to be like. Rain and fur don't mix very well now, do they? That's why every week, Sci-Fi for Me gives you the weather forecast for every city hosting a convention. Those we have on our list, anyway. And that's worldwide, not just in the United States. It's part of our commitment to bring you content you won't find anywhere else. Just click on the conventions tab over at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Jedi, Sith, Tauntauns, no matter which side of the Force you claim, we are your go-to holocron for all the latest Star Wars news, rumors, and innuendo. Imperial Intelligence has got nothing on us. We've got your salacious crumbs every other Sunday at 6 p.m. Central U.S. exclusively on Sci-Fi for Me TV.
SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse. And may the Force be with you.
Whoa, where'd you get that shirt?
Bought it at the convention last week. It's an Atomic Cotton design.
Atomic Cotton?
Yep, they got t-shirt designs from sci-fi, horror, cult films. All the shirts were really unique and fun. I had to get one.
I gotta wait for another convention, though.
Nope, AtomicCotton.com. I ordered a shirt, shipping was super fast.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
Sometimes a B is a perfect score. Now back to the Bomb Shelter Podcast on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Welcome back. Yes, we're still talking about the Brainiac.
Our brains are still only semi-working right now, I would say.
Yes, I feel like my brain is being kept in a bowl in a cabinet somewhere right now.
Yeah, we're a little worn out. We went to an event together recently, and I think that day just, at least for me, completely wore my brain out and my everything.
Kind of cooked our brains.
Yeah, really. Out in the sun for hours.
Yeah, it literally just in the sun, and it was really, really hot, but it was really, really cool. So
yes,
we don't regret it at all.
Nope.
So, at any rate, we said earlier that there's a lot in the movie that doesn't quite make sense, things that are just... they happen and you just accept it.
Yeah.
We don't know. Well, okay. I will say they do mention that the origin of the Baron is never explained. You know, they say that we don't know where he came from.
Yeah.
The Inquisitors say we don't know where he came from. We don't know anything about him. It's mentioned in one of the books, later on, one of the history books. Everything else, though, you're along for the ride, and you go with it.
You just let it happen.
Yeah. Now, I don't know, but I'm assuming that part of the reason is this movie was originally made in Mexico, in Spanish, for Mexican audience. In the 50s and 60s, there was a gentleman by the name of Kenneth Gordon Murray, or known as K. Gordon Murray. He purchased the rights to dub in English and release in the U.S. a lot of Mexican-made movies. This was one of them. He also did probably a few we're going to review
we'll visit these at some point.
Little Red Riding Hood and the Monsters, Santa Claus, which we definitely will.
Yes, we will.
He took a lot of the Santo Luchador movies, the Mexican wrestler movies, and he changed the Santo's name to Samson, redubbed them, and released them here.
Yeah.
One of his most famous ones is probably The Robot versus the Aztec Mummy, which I want to see just because of the name.
Yeah, me too. It's
just simply because of that. But he would purchase these, the rights, and then he'd redub them, and kind of like Manos, the dubs didn't really...
Yeah.
They didn't translate super well. I think, as I seem to remember somewhere, I think he did almost a verbatim kind of dub, so things...
Yeah, which never works.
Yeah, and it doesn't come out... Well, it does come out sounding weird. I mean, the English is proper, but there's a lot of long pauses.
Yeah.
Followed by sentences that just run on and mash together.
Go on and on and on, yeah.
Yeah, because he's trying to sync them up with the person speaking. But... I don't know if he changed any of the stories at all, of the script. I don't recall seeing in the credits for this. I recall seeing, production credits for Murray and I believe another director credit for another American. So I'm assuming there was some direction for the dubbing at least. But that may account for the fact that there's not a lot of...
Yeah.
Background and a lot of things, because where does he come from? We don't know. Why is he a brain-eating monster? We don't know.
Yeah, usually when you get revenge, I mean, if I had the ability to come back and get revenge, I mean, I guess I could come back as a monster, but why? I mean, why wouldn't I just come back as a ghost or like a living dead type creature that looks just like myself and stabs people or something? Why sucking brains? It's like a mix of every kind of horror creature.
Because that whole litany of crimes against humanity that he purportedly committed, none of them said anything about eating brains or poking people in the back of the head. And so it just kind of comes out of nowhere. It's not even a convenience. Yeah. It's just
It's almost more difficult. It's like now on top of just getting revenge and killing these people, he also has to suck brains, and it's... I don't know, maybe he picked up a taste for brains during the 300 years that he was
riding around on a comet.
Yeah.
Well, and then...
Riding a comet will do that to you.
And then it's not... It makes me hungry for brains all the time. It's never explained, though, where the brains in the bowl come from.
Yeah.
Did he regurgitate them, and how do they reconstitute into full brains again?
Yeah.
Is that the way he gets the brains, or could he eat... cow brains, sheep brains or something like that? Does it have to be human brains? There's a lot of stuff that there's no answers to.
And why doesn't he refrigerate them? That's my question.
Why doesn't he refrigerate them? Because you would think brains would spoil.
Yes.
Why does he insist upon eating them when there's a party of people around?
Yeah, you couldn't just like, hey, they're about to show up. I'm going to have a little bit of brains now to hold off until they're done. Like maybe if you're a smoker and you don't want to smoke around certain people, you might have a cigarette real quick before they get there and then hold off until they leave.
Or excuse himself.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I need to go...
To use the restroom. Keep a little stash of brains in the restroom.
Yeah, in the cabinet there with the toilet paper. Yeah, something. a lot of it doesn't make sense, but I'm wondering if some of it may have been explained in the Spanish version.
Yeah.
And things just kind of were left out.
You would think after 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of Spanish that I'd be able to speak a little bit of Spanish, but I can't. I can say cheese. I'm not even going to say them in Spanish, but I can say the word cheese. I can say grandparents and skeletons, and those are pretty much the only three words I know in Spanish.
Put together a sentence with pretty much all the Spanish I know, and it is, "Ay caramba, el queso en mis pantalones es en fuego." Oh.
I know pantalones too.
Translates out to, "Oh no, the cheese in my pants is on fire."
Yeah.
Nice. So there you go. Yeah. And I didn't take any Spanish.
Yeah.
Yeah, so check me out.
Spanish is, or probably all foreign languages are like kryptonite is to Superman to me. I cannot pick up other languages.
I can do other languages. I've been in Mexico a few times and had to stumble my way through.
Yeah.
And I always managed to get what I needed, even though it was very broken.
Maybe I need to be in a real life situation to make it happen. Yeah. You know, kind of be forced to it.
Yeah, it's immersion. Yeah. It works. So there you go. A little bit of background on the movie. So let's move on to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
And this movie, unlike our last couple movies, Mac and Me and Abraxas, we actually like this movie.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. Now, the 12 pounds of pizza in my stomach made me doze off a couple times during the movie, but I like this movie. It's for all the badness and the goofy special effects and just the weird plot that may or may not be messed up through the translation. I really like the movie. It's entertaining. It's not supposed to be funny, but it makes me laugh every time.
And it's short.
Yeah.
So
how long is it? I mean, when the end showed up on the screen, I'm like, what?
Yeah, I think it's maybe 80 something minutes.
Yeah.
I don't.
It's short. Either
one. Yeah, way it's really, really short.
Yeah.
So that makes it, you know, if you want to just throw something in right quick and you know, just for kicks, and it's, I would imagine it's public domain.
Oh yeah.
So which is it has to be, because that's where all the DVDs I have for it are public domain. But really easy to find. But okay, so The Good.
It's entertaining.
It's entertaining.
Yeah,
it's
whether entertaining for the reasons that someone making a film might want it to be, I don't know if that happened. But it entertains me. I'll definitely watch it again, even if not for a podcast, just for fun.
Yeah, and it is. It's fun. The monster's, sufficiently goofy. The plot is out there. And it just is a good way to shut off your brain for a little bit. Yeah, your brain again. It's coming up a lot. So, the bad.
I don't know. In this situation, it's hard to say.
Yeah, nothing egregiously bad. It is pretty much just a product of its time.
Yeah.
The special effects weren't great then. They didn't have a lot to go with.
I think everything that you could say is bad about this movie just twists itself around and makes it good.
Yeah,
I
mean,
it
makes it really endearing to me. Just the,
I think the bad is the good. I mean, that's, without the bad, it wouldn't be as good.
Yeah. I mean, the comic cracks me up. All of its forms.
Yeah.
I love it. And the ugly, well, I don't really have an ugly for this.
I don't think I do. I mean, the monster is ugly, but I mean, that's, the monster is supposed to be ugly. Yeah. So
he is really, really ugly.
Yeah. He's one of the uglier, I mean, because there's scary, like, he's not necessarily, well, if he suddenly walked in the room behind us, I'd be scared, I guess.
Yeah.
But he's just ugly. He's an ugly monster, you know?
Well, when I think about horror movies, the old Universal movies, Dracula wasn't particularly scary looking.
Yeah.
Frankenstein, maybe disturbing when you figure out, he's bits and pieces of different people. The Phantom of the Opera, I never figured out what was...
Yeah.
Well, I know the Lon Chaney one, he's got a, messed up face and everything, so it's kind of, off-putting when you're little. And the Wolfman, he just looks like a big dog.
Yeah.
And so not really scary. Not scary like the alien from Alien or the Thing or something like that. But this one, he ranks up there with monsters that would have given me a nightmare as a kid.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Yeah.
Nothing too terribly bad about this movie. Nothing that I couldn't say, go run right out and see it.
Yeah, if you're interested in B movies, bad movies, this is
definitely one to seek out.
This is one to look for. Yeah, it's not, you know, there's like Jay just mentioned, there's Mac and Me, which is, you maybe want to see it once just to say, yeah, I did it. Like, get a t-shirt that says, I watched Mac and Me.
All I got was this lousy shirt.
Yeah, something like that. But this is one where, I mean, like I said, I've watched it several times, and this is the only time I've watched it for a purpose other than having fun.
Yeah, and it was still fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we suggest go out and see it. Find it.
Right now. In the theater near you.
In the theater near you.
Oh, wait,
you.
Maybe not.
Well, yeah, that might be a little more difficult.
Yeah.
But, so there you go. The Brainiac. I guess that's pretty much
probably
it.
Close.
Do you have any final thoughts on this? I mean, we know it's worth watching. We know it's fun. We may be seeing some of these same actors later. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we'll definitely be revisiting K. Gordon Murray's output.
Yeah, definitely.
Output.
We're...
be sure to listen around Christmas time.
Yeah. Yeah.
There will be one definitely. So there you have it.
I think that's about all for this episode. If you like this, please let us know. And you can find information on Sci-Fi for Me at many different places. For example,
you can find us at scififorme.com.
Yeah.
You can find us at Facebook at scififorme.com.
Let's say you like to use Twitter.
You could probably find us there, scififorme.com. Well, not .com, but scififorme.
Yeah. And not Instagram, though. Oh, wait, yes, Instagram.
I bet you could find us on Instagram,
okay.
Scififorme.
And also YouTube.
If you search for scififorme, I'll bet you'll find us there.
You could even just probably Google scififorme. That's with the number 4, not the word 4.
Not the word 4. You won't find us if you do that. But
all over the place.
All over the place. We got all sorts of videos and podcasts and fun stories to
read.
Lots
of fun stuff.
And pictures and all sorts of news. So go. Go now.
Do it.
Do it now. You want to.
All right.
Until then, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you later.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Copyright 2017 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.